Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Now we're actually going to have to generate content to fill up the time that our intro normally fills.
I was like, I should cut that down. It's 48 seconds long. I'm going to cut it down. And you could tell right at the beginning there, and then nothing else changes. I cut 2 seconds out of it.
It seemed like a lot.
It did seem like a lot right at the beginning, if you've ever heard it before.
Hi. I was doing a little Star Wars research this last week, and you know the Mos Eisley, I don't know how it's pronounced.
Mos Eisley Cantina?
Yeah, the Star Wars Cantina. Did you know that they actually serve Chinese food there?
I did not know that.
Yeah, and in that original episode, one of the cut scenes was actually Luke Skywalker with Obi-Wan having a little Kung Pao chicken, and... Ben Kenobi, he was awesome, doing great and eating his food. And Luke, he just kept stumbling, and the chopsticks were all over the place and stumbling. And of course, you know, Ben was just like, use the forks, Luke.
The hardest part of that was that I saw it coming, and I still had to take the journey with you, whether or not I liked it or not. Well, hi. Welcome to another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. I am one of your hosts, Todd Workoven, and with me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing really well today. I just read that over the last 4 days, Bitcoin crashed another 20% down.
Oh, really?
So... on Wednesday, it reached an all-time high of $7,458 per Bitcoin, and just now it's down to $5,900. So from $7,400 to $5,900.
Is there anything to account for this?
It's just, I don't know, other than just crazy volatility and the wild fluctuations.
Something panicked the robots.
Exactly.
And now they're all... So I don't think I'll tell the whole story now, but I was house sitting this past weekend, and for those that know me, I'm always listening to podcasts, and I always use my little iPod Shuffle, which is that little tiny square one button, whatever. I've used it forever. It's like my favorite thing.
I love the Shuffle.
And I'm often, it's old enough now that the spring to hold it on the belt doesn't work. And I was carrying my stuff in this house that I'm house sitting, and I was rounding the corner by the bathroom, and one of the buttons on my coat caught my headphone cord, and it ripped my headphone cord out of my ears and flung out of the Shuffle, and then threw the Shuffle into the toilet.
Nice.
Which, thank goodness, they had just like immaculately cleaned, but just bloop. right down the middle, slid down the middle. And so I looked for a couple seconds, and then I grabbed it.
Of course.
And they didn't have any rice in the entire house, which was crazy. And I was like, well, should I crush up these oyster crackers? Those are really dry. And it's like, no, it'll just make a mess. And so I wrapped in paper towels and left it there for maybe about an hour or so, and it still works. So go iPod Shuffle.
That's awesome. I love the Shuffle. I also loved my original Nano,
was that the stick of gum one, long one? I never had that one. I always just went, amazing. What was different about that one in the Shuffle? Just the size?
You had a screen on the Nano.
Oh, right.
Just a little tiny screen, and so you could manage playlists.
Okay.
And,
a screen. So that way you don't have to blindly fast forward through your audiobook when you accidentally click back one too many times.
Exactly.
So I don't remember if we talked, I think we might have mentioned this next thing on the show before, but didn't really talk about it. But when I was growing up, my neighbors always had kind of like the newest gadget, the newest toy, and blah, blah, blah. And I remember them having something that I always assumed was a laser disc. It was the same size of a laser disc. It had, you know, a machine, and they had movies on it. But they were in these big plastic cases. Like, they didn't slip out of the thing. And I was at a Value Village a couple weeks ago, and somebody had dropped off like 10 or 15 of them. Somebody gotten rid of their collection, and I was standing there, and this guy came up next to me. He's like, "Oh, do you know how those work?" And I kind of said something about, "Oh, you know, similar to a laser disc, I imagine," or whatever. And he said, "No, those work on vinyl." And I was like, "Okay, well, whatever." And I couldn't, like, there wasn't a way to open it in the store without wrecking it. And so I went home and I looked these things up. They're the size of a record, a 12-inch record, and they are called an RCA Selectivision video disc. And the thing about these video discs is RCA made the only player, and it began in the late 1960s. They started to develop a technology that puts that recorded video onto vinyl, just like a vinyl record. And because it was underfunded, there was only like four engineers on the project, blah, blah, blah. It took until 1982 for RCA to release their Selectivision discs. And so I popped one open. What they are, and so I went and watched a whole video on this, and I'm just fascinated, because what they are is you put the whole case, the whole plastic case, and I'll put a picture of this up probably as this week's thing, into the machine. The machine pops a disc out. The disc is vinyl, and you're not supposed to take these apart, but I popped it out anyway. So that pops it right into the machine. Gosh. The reason they're in these big delivering package things is that there is a groove on there. So that is a vinyl mixed with something to make it magnetic, or to, so you can run a current through it. But the groove is so small that it's impossible to clean. So like if there's a piece of dust on it or like, and so when they were testing it out, they realized they couldn't have people handle them like records because they would just be ruined. And so they put them in these big plastic cases. And when you put the plastic case in, it pops the disc right onto the platter. And then you take the case back out and leave the disc in. But the way it works, so it does work with a stylus and it does work with a groove, but the technology is a little bit different than a vinyl record in that the stylus doesn't actually touch or go into a groove. The stylus, can you see, you're using your little microscope there. Can you see anything interesting or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go over there a second.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow. That's neat.
Yeah. There. And the grooves are so small that you cannot feel.
No, it feels.
They feel smooth.
It's smooth to the touch. And it even has that sheen, like the laser disc sheen or whatever, where it's very reflective and has the rainbow. But whereas a record player has the stylus that has the point in it that sits in the groove and actually physically wiggles.
You can feel the grooves if you take your fingernail across it.
Oh, interesting.
Barely.
So there is 17 miles of groove on that disc.
Yeah.
And it's a two-sided disc. So halfway through the movie, you have to flip it over. I believe it's an hour capacity on each side. And the way this stylus works is that it hovers just above and barely touches the disc. So it doesn't go up and down. It barely touches it. What it's doing is it has pits, but not the kind of optical pits. Remember when we talked about optical storage, how they have the different pits? So it does, it has pits like a record that changes the electric flow between the stylus and what it's reading. And then it turns that into data in the machine and sends that to the, but it is physically read with a stylus and a groove. But by the time that they finally came to market in 1982, laser discs have already been invented.
Ah.
And VHS is just taking off. So for the cheap consumer side, you could get a VCR, or if you're a purist, you can get the laser discs. And the laser discs, like these what they call CED discs, which stands for
capacitance electronic disc.
Disc system, yeah. And so in England, it was even worse because the only titles that came out were like the 50 that happened to be like, so they all come out onto the market. They didn't sell very well, obviously. But the movie studios said, well, okay, we'll at least make movie. We'll at least print movies in them for 3 years. And so they kind of did that, but they didn't even do that in England. So in England, there was like 50 movies available that just happened to be out at the same time that they were selling the machine. So that turned out to be like way more fascinating than I ever thought these things were.
Wow.
And of course,
they're really cool.
They kind of came and went and because other things had already passed it on because it took about, you know, 15 years for it to come to market just because, and it actually was such a boondoggle that it caused RCA to sell to, I believe, General Electric because the RCA was just like all in on this format and it did not work. So
hardware manufacturing and technology and media it's always been like since the invention of the first record player has always been that.
Yeah.
Multiple players playing all of their cards and one coming out victorious. And the one that comes out victorious is usually not the best one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually not.
It's just,
but anyway, so yeah, that was my super fast. So that's what I did. If you're ever wondering what I do on a Saturday night, it's watch 30 minute videos from a British guy on how he found a machine, fixed it and then played it. So it had an interesting story too. So I thought that was cool. The other thing I had, and I don't know how much we'll talk about it. I accidentally typed spreader in there. That is not what the app is called. The app is called Spreader, and I technically spelled
not even better.
Reader correctly.
That's better.
Spreader.
Spreader. I don't know.
It's for quick. No, and I think maybe you've seen it before. It is it's an app you can get for free, but it's also a speed reading program.
Oh yeah.
And it's that speed reading where it just flashes one word at a time. Yep. And you can read like 1,000 times faster. Yep. And it is really, really fascinating. And you can try it out just for fun. I thought it was if you go to
Spreeder,
that's Spreeder, .com/app/PHP. And you can probably find that for mobile too, but they have a box that you can put your text in and then it transforms it into that. And you can adjust how fast or how slow it goes or how many words it shows up, but it really is amazing. I've seen GIFs that have like a whole little story just using that. And it is quite amazing how much faster you can read when you just see one word at a time in front of you without your eyes having to scan back and forth. So anyway, that was kind of fun. So
I'm spreading right now.
Spreeder.
I barely knew her.
All right. So let's do some news. How about that? So we have a self-driving shuttle crash, Mark. It is coming within hours of it starting in the Las Vegas shuttle.
So I have to say that
had an accident.
I read an article about this from a person that was on the bus.
A firsthand account.
So let's tell what the
All
situation
right, so
was.
A driverless shuttle was involved in an accident hours after it debuted in the streets of downtown Las Vegas last Wednesday. But those involved in the conception of the project said the shuttle was not at fault. Of course they did. Quote, I was going to say the robots took my teletype away, but there it is. Quote, the exciting thing is that the vehicle did exactly what it was programmed to do. This is really a good real-world case of how technology actually works, said John Marino, a spokesman for the AAA. Quote, the shuttle came to a complete stop. A semi-truck driver was backing up and unfortunately continued to back up and may not have seen the shuttle and grazed the front bumper of it. The shuttle recognized that the semi-truck was backing up, and as it's programmed to do, it stopped, which I would have backed up, but I'm no robot, I guess.
Exactly.
Had the truck had the same sensing equipment that the shuttle had, it would have never happened. Human attendants are also on the shuttle in case there are kinks that require manual steering and all of that stuff. So
yeah, and so... That's not too far off from the first-hand account. This lady was on the bus, and she said that When the truck was backing up, it took a weird, it overcorrected, and they were in view of the mirrors the entire time. They should have been seen. And apparently there's no horn on the self-driving car. And so a couple
that
notes.
Seems odd oversight.
Like a bad oversight. And it didn't have LiDAR that points backwards. And so it can't just throw it into reverse because it didn't know what was behind it, apparently.
Why?
But I don't know. So
seems like all of those things could have been taken care of with a simple question, like the very first round of design.
Yes. So it's a French company that that the car is, it's a French manufactured car, self-driving car, and it only travels like 20 miles an hour. It's super.
I saw somebody's video of it and I was excited because I thought it was going to be in the video of them crashing, but it was like, must have been, it was the very, very first. First run, and apparently it took a couple hours for it to crash. So.
Exactly. The Voktail.
The Voktail. See that. I don't know what it is yet, though.
Drinks are so last century, but they're getting an upgrade.
Amazing. Is that your segue, or is that the story?
That's the story. A device called the Voktail is shaking up the traditional cocktail by mixing in a dash of electronics designed to fool your senses. So basically they've taken a drink and wrapped it in there's smell there's
olfactory senses.
Olfactory senses. Yeah, and so it's like throwing all of the senses at you trying to disguise and enhance the drink. So
I don't understand
the special interactive
word you say. Okay.
Plays with the senses of the drinker, including sight, smell, and taste. The interactive drink consists of a cocktail glass that fits nicely in a 3D printed structure, which contains all the electronics for multisensory stimulation. So the electronics within the device aim to enhance the drinker's senses and create virtual flavors and also boost existing flavors. So there's 3 scent cartridges, 3 micro air pumps, which provide the aroma of the drink. The smell chambers at the, as the author calls it, are placed beneath the glass and take about 1 second for the smell to come up to the drink. On top of that, there are LEDs that provide different colors of the drink. And finally, the system also contains 2 silver electrodes on the rim of the cup, which stimulate the tongue in order to give salty, bitter, or sweet tastes whilst consuming the drink. Different magnitudes of current are used to stimulate different.
That sounds like a wise idea to have around a liquid.
The tongue for these.
Can we build current into this?
180 microamps for a sour taste, 40 microamps for a salty taste. And
see, that's interesting.
80 microamps for a bitter taste.
How does that work?
I mean, all of our senses are electrical pulses,
right?
Like they're one, sensing device triggering a neurological response with electricity. And so if you can stimulate those same pieces of tissue with electricity, you can trick it to think that that's something.
That's
that it's
weird.
Not. Yeah.
I am uncomfortable with that.
And while I was looking up that, have you ever heard of Bevy? The Bevy, there's like water coolers that are like instead of just water, you can say, I want the lemon cherry spring refreshed, partially carbonated thing, right?
Okay.
And but I was reading about all these reviews of it. If your internet goes down, it fails to work at all. And
it's a cooler?
It's like a water drink dispenser at the office.
I'm thinking like you take camping a type of cooler.
No.
I see. Like a
water jug
thing.
Okay. Yeah, stand around the water cooler, gossip around the water cooler. And they cost $250 to $400 a month. That's the face. Yes, that wide-eyed face.
I was like, reasonable, wow.
Per month. Yes.
Wow.
As low as 20 cents per drink if you drink high volumes.
A lot. Well, oh, what happened? Our teletype just...
I don't know.
I guess.
It's okay.
So what is the...
Vocktail?
Vocktail. What does that stand... is that
virtual cocktail? It's a vocktail.
Oh, that name doesn't work at all.
Vocktail.
Vocktail. Wow. So where can one find one of these? Do we know?
It's just in development right now. It's not available to the public yet.
Wow.
Not until they go through the underwriter's laboratory tests of shocking your tongue
with electricity as you drink. Wow.
So there's, we found an old email, a forum post for a well-capitalized Seattle startup seeks Unix developers. A well-capitalized startup seeks extremely talented C, C++, Unix developers to help pioneer commerce on the internet. You must have experience designing and building large and complex yet maintainable systems.
Are we just the classifieds now?
We kind of are. You should have a BS, MS, or PhD in computer science, and this is signed Jeff Bezos in 1994, on August 21st, 1994. This was him looking for developers for the start of Amazon.
Wow, that's trippy.
Yeah.
That's weird that that's still around.
I know.
I was asking the guys at the Not Nerd podcast, like, things like internet history or like these posts that you make in a news group in like 1995, like the whatever your Twin Peaks board that you were on at that point or whatever. Is all of that, I mean, where it...
It's on hard drive somewhere. You know, it's all on the internet.
I guess I just can't fathom like the exponential growth of what's being stored versus the value of that thing. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like at some point you have to bump something off.
Like Wayback Machine and archive.org and stuff. I mean, they have a mission to save those things, to archive everything.
That is so freaky.
This email ended with, or the forum post ended with, your compensation will include meaningful equity ownership. Think of having ownership in Amazon at 1994.
Wow.
And how many billions of dollars you'd have now.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Let's see. What else we got? Oh, Bill Gates. Speaking of rich people. Bill Gates buys a chunk of land in Arizona to build a smart city. So one of Bill Gates' investment firms, they put just $80 million to kickstart the development of a brand new community in the far West Valley, just about 45 minutes out of Phoenix. According to Belmont Partners, a real estate investment group based in Arizona, the goal is to turn the land into its own smart city. So they'll create a forward-thinking community with a communication infrastructure spine that embraces cutting-edge technology, self-driving cars and everything within this circle. So it'd be about the size of Tempe, Arizona, which is a suburb of
Phoenix.
The size of Delaware. The size of Vancouver, Washington or something.
So Bill Gates is asking me for money.
No. He took money.
He
has invested and bought a plot of land.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of the desert.
I'm seeing now that I'm reading the article in front of me. It says to kickstart the development. I heard Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
And I was Bill Gates.
Does not need your money for a Kickstarter campaign. IBM Watson makes a treatment plan for brain cancer patient in 10 minutes versus the doctors taking 160 hours. It turns out it's not as cut and dry as that. So this study included several facets, and they were trying to learn and compare how doctors do it versus how Watson generated it. And the speed was... obviously magnitudes faster. The result wasn't as holistic. And so the doctors were able...
the guy just ended up as a torso.
We cut everything off. No cancer now.
Take no chances. Take it all.
And so part of it was about how many genome, how much of the genome do they have to sequence in order to get all of the right information? And in the end, unfortunately for this specific study, the patient died very rapidly, and so neither was able to save the life of the patient. But they got as many learnings out of the process as possible. One of the things that the doctors were able to do is cross-reference things that didn't have a direct correlation between two genes that had different abnormalities with them. Mm-hmm. And now they're feeding that information back into Watson to improve Watson. But I think IBM is actually having a difficult time with, I've read a couple things about how they're trying to find the right place for Watson. They've spent billions of dollars in research and development. And they've got this magic
but
thing.
Like, what do you do with it?
What do you do with it to actually capitalize
now
on it?
Now, is Watson a single machine, or like, is Watson a program that can run
really,
on different things?
It's a
or combination, I guess.
Yeah, I guess ultimately it's software. And so it can run on multiple things. So there's it's basically
so it's the Siri of really
yeah,
good artificial
yeah, that's probably,
intelligence.
It's probably a good way of putting it. You know, you would have to back it up with the data set that makes Watson Watson,
yeah,
to be able to articulate and read natural language and be able to you know, digest that information and do it. But I'm sure that the Watson doing work in the medical field would have some different settings than that, you know, working on the Star Trek video game.
Right.
So both are Watson.
Right. In the end. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, NASA is working with Uber on its flying taxi project. So Uber signed a deal with NASA Wednesday to help develop traffic systems for its flying car project, which it calls on-demand aviation. And it's called Uber Elevate. So it's signed with NASA to develop, and NASA is trying to figure out how to, where to fly unmanned aerial systems without it causing issues and with it being safely. So NASA's working with that. Uber wants to make vertical takeoff and landing vehicles, quote, combining Uber's software engineering expertise with NASA's decades of airspace experience, is a crucial step forward. And Uber has been working with some other, like, not just companies, but it's working with some cities. It's working with Dallas and Dubai to bring flying taxis to the city. So I guess that thing that we always say, it's like, where's our flying cars? I guess they're coming and they'll all fly themselves, which makes me I can get behind that. Like, I am not at all a fan of the self-driving cars. I am just fine with the self-driving flying things like that. To me, keep the regular folks out of the air, and maybe the rest of us can just drive our own cars around. So I'm all for the automated flying.
What part of my self-driving car anxiety is the last minute little personal preferences that I have that I know my self-driving car won't have.
Yeah.
Like, well, you can't just park in the driveway. You have to park on this side of the street because that's us.
Yeah.
That's our side of the street. And so, yeah, you have to take the route around the block the other way so that you're positioned up to park correctly in front of our house.
Yeah.
And I feel like if everything's autonomous.
And I think we'll all start noticing that stuff so much more. It's like it's like being a foreigner and trying to understand all those tiny little idiosyncrasies that we do. And we're going to notice that none of those are done anymore. And it's going to start freaking people out.
What if I want to just drive through the forest?
Yeah.
Like,
you take your Jeep out into the forest.
Yeah. Go on a dirt road up to some, you know, let's go on a picnic.
And it rewrites into the ocean like Waze does sometimes. Turn left at Pacific Ocean. Just a line of self-driving cars off a cliff on the coast. Well, remember when Pokemon Go was a gigantic thing? When was that, last summer?
I think that was two summers ago. Like, well.
Yeah, okay. Well,
yeah.
I guess this last summer would have been, it would have been a year and a couple
year
months
ago. Year
and a
half ago,
this summer of 2016.
So I, this last week, got to level 30.
Nice. Is that good? How many levels are there?
There's 40 altogether, but each one becomes progressively, like, exponentially more, you have to collect more things.
Okay.
And so I'm kind of done. I am done with, and I think I'm the last one.
I was going to say, you really chewed the flavor out of that. Well, good thing. Now you're just in time for Niantic, who is the company who actually made Pokemon Go. Their follow-up game is going to be a Harry Potter augmented reality game. So that should be launching in 2018. So first they came for the Pokemon nerds and we said nothing. And now we're going to be assaulted with Harry Potter nerds. So we'll get used to that.
I'm just a muggle.
Is that as deep as your references go? I guess that's all I have to.
That's all I got.
Dumbledore or something. One last story here. This kind of will tie into our main topic. But something I didn't know existed is that there is a cadaver company in Gresham. So Gresham is a suburb of Portland here. And a Portland cadaver company was raided by the FBI on November 1. No charges have been filed against MedCure, which is the Gresham-based cadaver procurement company. And they won't say what the investigators were looking for. MedCure calls itself, quote, a tissue bank that connects whole body donors to the medical researchers and medical education facilities. It solicits cadavers from people who want to donate their body to science and from families looking for cheap alternatives to a traditional funeral. The company claims to have 82,000 registered donors. If you die and say, I want my body donated to science, they're like the intermediary to get your body to science. I guess you don't just put your body in the mail and mail it to science. Right. It's got to go.
Dear science. Here's my body.
So yeah, it goes through researchers and medical schools. It offers, the company also offers on-site surgical training. And it's got a couple different locations, one in Henderson, Nevada, and the other in Cumberland, Rhode Island. So while it is illegal to profit from the sale of organs destined for transplants such as hearts and kidneys, but as detailed in a series by Reuters last month, it is legal in most states to sell donated whole bodies and their dissected parts such as arms and heads for medical research, training, and education. So that is a company that exists in Portland, and for some reason they were raided by the FBI and we're not quite sure yet. So details of that,
details to come,
hopefully in an expose all over the nightly news. So do stay tuned for that.
Portland expose.
Yeah, part two. It's
part two.
All right. Well, let's go to Brian, the Unipiper, and see what's going on around Portland this month. And when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about body farms to follow up our cadaver talk. So we will be back in just a second.
Hello, is this the Unipiper?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Nothing makes sense anymore.
Are we speaking specifically or just like as the general tone and demeanor of the times we're in?
Both.
So what's happening?
I just found out that a celebrity has stolen my photo and is sharing it without credit. So I'm upset. Would you like to take any guesses at who I am directing my negative emotions toward today?
Is this a local celebrity or is it a nationally known celebrity?
Let's say that their following on Facebook is 5.1 million.
And they're they're using what picture of yours are they using?
Darth Vader.
And is it just a photo or is it a meme that it was put together like afterward or what?
No, it's literally just my photo with no credit or watermark.
Huh.
5.5. Luke Skywalker?
I'm missing out on a completely new audience, you know, right here.
I have no idea who.
Larry the Cable Guy.
What? What?
Larry the Cable what? Guy is.
Hold on, I have a special.
What?
Yes, he apparently likes the Unipiper would like the Unipiper if he knew that that's who this was.
So where is he? What?
On Facebook. He just stole my image and
all right, so I'm going to Facebook right now, clicking
Larry the Cable Guy.
And he's on
the radio on XM.
Uh-oh, I think me and Mark are going at the same time, so it's messing us up here.
It's slowing the internet's down. We're all putting too much of a load on. Oh, sure enough. I bet you didn't know you needed Darth Vader on a unicycle rocking some flaming bagpipes, but you did.
Oh, there it is. Wow.
It's got 4,271 shares.
Yeah.
7,800 views. Wow, at least everyone's saying, at least the first person I see, that is the Unipiper in downtown Portland, Oregon. So I'm sure the rest of these comments are at least getting your name there.
A few of them.
Wow. So are you going to, ooh, can you take legal action against Larry the Cable Guy?
The Unipiper versus Larry the Cable Guy.
Yes!
That sounds like a made for TV movie.
That would, and just sue him like on behalf of comedy.
have you heard him talk without his
I don't think
Southern
I've
drawl?
Ever seen him interviewed out of character. I've seen him perform. There's some YouTube clips of him. I forget his real name.
Is that his real accent?
No, it's not. It's a complete put on. I mean, Ernest or something like that. Yeah. But I don't know that. Well, when he got famous, I don't think he would ever be interviewed out of character. So I think lots of people don't know. It's I forget. I used to know his real name for some reason, but now I don't.
That's so funny. So yesterday, Sarah and I went to our second and thankfully final childcare class, and our the instructor of the class for about a quarter of the time during the class, she had a really bad Southern accent, and it was so off-putting because Sarah and I could just tell that, you know, she was faking this accent to kind of make herself talk down to the level of us people in the class.
What?
Yeah, it was.
Was she the instructor your whole time you've been going, and this is the first time she's done it?
No. We've had a different instructor each time.
Okay. But she was clearly faking or at least embellishing,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah. And then to like when she really wanted to stress a point or make a note that like this is common sense, you should really pay attention to this, she would just slip into a Southern accent.
Is that like whenever Hillary Clinton would be in the South? She would just slip into that. I don't know. No ways. Tired. quote. Exactly. Oh. That's amazing. Like, that is so weird.
Like Madonna.
Yes, in Britain. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, I was born in Detroit.
What, do we have Adele on the show now?
How shocking was it the first time you ever heard Adele speak? I just...
What a beautiful
voice of an
just an angel.
It really is the reverse of the ugly duckling. Oh man. Larry the Cable Guy
clearly
trying to piggyback on your success.
I had another hilarious Unipiper anecdote from this week that I would just love to share.
Yes, please.
So I was riding my bicycle into work. That's the one with two wheels. And so when I commute, I most of the time do not hold onto my handlebar because I ride my unicycle so much. I've just trained. It just feels weird to hold onto a handlebar if I don't need to. So I'm just riding along. You know, it's not like I'm a wild man and I'm falling over or anything. You know, I've got my bicycle perfectly under control and I'm just riding along minding my own business, and I swear this person on a bicycle rides up next to me and they look at me and they give me this like scowl, this scorn on their face, and they're like, "You're not impressing anyone. You're not the Unipiper, you know." True story.
That is great. Oh, you are now, yeah, the standard of like badass person who can ride without number one and then get chastised for it.
Yeah, I wanted to say, like,
don't you know who I am?
I usually have a propane tank strapped to my back when I do this. I think I'll take my chances.
Oh, that is great. You're not the Unipiper, you know.
That was like when Zach Galifianakis was seen in a like the grocery store in the produce section. And this lady comes up to him, is like, "You look just like that guy from The Hangover. No offense."
No offense. Oh.
Wasn't there a musical artist that entered like an impersonator competition and lost?
Cher and Adele. I know that Cher went to I used to work with Cher's former manager. And he and Cher went to an impersonators conference in Las Vegas. And they're like, "Ugh, you're terrible."
All those terrifying drag queens.
totally drag queens. And there's a really great video where Adele goes to an Adele impersonators show and everybody cries and everything. It was very much a uplifting amazing story with Adele.
I do feel like there was another story of that.
There was also not Crystal. There's a single word that's like Crystal that she's
Gem.
She's no.
Truly outrageous. Truly, truly, no. Truly outrageous.
No.
Is she a singer?
She is a singer, kind of in the country-ish.
Crystal Gale.
I am a woman.
I have all those shut. Dang it.
Diamond, gem, crystal. There, she's got one word that's its a name. Anyway, she went to karaoke in costume. Basically, they had makeup artists put a big nose on her and a big chin and like change her skin tone a little bit. And she went, not like blackface, but like whatever. And so she went and did karaoke and just nailed the songs, of course.
Yeah.
And then she left and then took the makeup off and then came back. And people were like, "There was a lady here that was just here. She was just saying this."
Oh, funny. Ruby.
No.
Diamond.
Gosh darn it.
Are you naming American Gladiators now?
You'll think of it the second after we turn off the mic.
Jewel.
Jewel. Oh, Jewel. Yeah.
Jewel.
Of course. Jewel. It seems so obvious now.
One of these days I will show up at the Portland Unipiper contest.
Yes.
Well, you did post that somebody got a pretty amazing tattoo of you.
Yes, that happened. I do not know that person, but holy crap, that was a badass tattoo.
Did you drop them a line or anything like that or not? Or did you just find it like out in the wild and couldn't track him down?
No, so it was the tattoo artist that posted it.
Oh, okay.
And he did send me a message and he said that he had never heard of me until the person came and wanting that tattoo, but he just wanted to say that he thought it was cool what I do.
Oh, that's awesome.
I supposedly that tattoo is going to be in color when it's done. So I'll
post
a picture of the finished thing when I find it.
Yeah. You can see that at your Facebook page.
Yep. So, along the lines of not knowing what to believe in this world anymore, I wanted to try and help our listeners out, because I'm sure that they are just having all sorts of mass confusion, knowing that there are competing cat shows in Portland this month.
Like conventions or like, oh, sorry, or like yes. People. Okay, so conventions.
Yeah, well, like best in show, you know.
Okay, okay. Shows. Oh, okay. I see. Like the competition, the showings or whatever.
That's right. I wasn't even aware of either of these until my good friend Mosho the Cat Rapper.
Yes.
Was talking about this, and he's actually going to be at one of these cat shows coming up next weekend, and I'll tell you which one that is. But they're almost identical shows, and they're a weekend apart. So going on this weekend is probably over by now. But at the Holiday Inn Portland Airport is the International Cat Association Cat Show. The website leaves a lot to the imagination, as they say in the industry. But I guess there's a cat show going on, and people bring their cats, and then there's going to be contests and a winner and stuff. But there's not a lot of information on the website. But it's there just enough to be confusing, because going on next weekend at the Portland Expo Center is the Cat Fanciers Association International Cat Show, which looks like the exact same thing. The difference being that this one will have a performance by Mosho.
Nice. So that clearly is the only one worth going to.
Exactly. Yeah. So I wanted to clear up any confusion there. If you're planning to go to one cat show, don't go to the one that's already over.
Don't crawl through a wormhole in space and go to the one that is done.
That's right.
So can you imagine if you had like work at that convention and you were allergic to cats? What a nightmare that would be.
Hope they would give you the day off at least. And obviously the Cat Fanciers Association, they are the legit one, because they're the ones who clearly have the rights to use Garfield in their marketing materials.
Oh, wow. Oh,
they do. It's right next to their logo.
When was the last time you thought about Garfield, man? Garfield used to be like everywhere.
Yeah, I remember those. I collected the comic strip books or whatever, the Garfield at Large, and there was like 15 or 16 of them.
Did you have a suction cup Garfield in your
car? I had a suction.
Well?
I didn't have it in the car. No, I didn't have the suction cup one. I had one. It was maybe about 3 inches high, and it was like a it was spring loaded, so like you could. It was like a chip clip or whatever, basically. So you can open it up and, you know, clamp him to a lamp or to the side or whatever, and he would like hold on to that. I got that from like the Scholastic Book Fair, I think.
Garfield was the epitome of like late 80s cool attitude.
Yep. Oh, totally. And boy, he hated Mondays. The voice, I remember the animated series of that too, and the voice that they picked for him always bothered me.
It never seemed right.
I don't know what the right voice would be, but it just never
wasn't
fit for
that,
me.
Yeah.
Hashtag,
well, you know the funny story about that. The guy that did the voice, they told him to sound like Bill Murray.
Oh, I did hear that.
And so that's what that voice was based on.
Oh, and then Bill Murray.
Yes, when they had those atrocious CGI Garfield movies from like the early 2000s, they got Bill Murray to be the voice of Garfield.
Oh, that's right. That makes sense, because that guy did sound a lot like Bill Murray.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Speaking of Bill Murray, I should have looked this up for the show. Maybe I can find it real quick. Bill Murray's going to be in town in Portland.
Oh, wow. Is he filming a movie here or just coming through?
Oregon Symphony.
Oh, is he singing or playing something?
He has a new album out where he reads spoken word, and there's like music in the background.
Oh, interesting. Like an evening with, perhaps? Is what they would call that.
At the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall on November 28th.
Oh, good. Got it in time.
And Jan Vogler will be with him.
Huh. Well, I guess there you go. November 28th, then at the Arlene Schnitzer, Bill Murray and the Oregon Symphony. Something I didn't think I would be saying today.
I'm checking to see if tickets are sold out.
Oh.
It does appear that tickets are
There's some upper balcony tickets that are available right now.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
So yeah, hopefully I'll get this out on Monday or so. So if there's still time, look into it.
Upper balcony, yes. $157 a piece.
And the Schnitzer isn't like huge. Like, so those are pretty decent seats, I guess.
Yeah, there's not a bad seat in the house. Yeah.
Ish. Well, now according that we've talked to their about PR it on the materials. Market podcast, there will not be any tickets.
Going fast.
Get them now, folks.
Anything else happening or coming up?
I'm having a baby and I know how to change a diaper. That's about all I know right now.
Good job. Just because of that Southern lady told you how to do it.
Gotta trust the Southern ladies.
Well, the Southern lady and Larry the cable guy, maybe the universe is trying to tell you something. I don't know what that would be, but
go south.
You don't
change
really
your accent,
it, y'all.
Change your accent. Exactly.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. If the people want to find out more about the Unipiper, what can they do?
They should go to unipiper.com and check out all of my social media channels. Please come see me live in person on December 2nd at the Portland Podcast Festival.
Yes, yes. We will also be there, but no one will want to meet us. So we'll stand there and take pictures for you of the people coming up to meet you.
We'll tell people what it's like to work with the Unipiper.
He records the whole podcast on the unicycle. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Brian. We will talk to you later.
All right. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
And we're back. I don't know. Did you need a break? Or?
No.
Okay. So I forget why this came across my radar. I must have seen a reference to it or something like that. But last week, before I was obsessed with the new CED desk that I'm obsessed with, the idea of body farms, and you kind of hear them, Silence of the Lambs, or in some other those medical mystery stories about these fields of bodies and scientists going through them. And so I finally decided to look it up, and it's a little more detailed and interesting than I thought. So the basic idea of the body farm is basically what we kind of describe. What I just said is that they study the effects of how weather and how insects or how scavengers or how all those things, all the effects on the human body, so that they can do their best in tracking back the time and the nature that the body that they discover, police discovers when that happens. So in 1972, there's an anthropologist named William Bass, and he was lamenting that there was almost no research or almost nothing known about human decomposition because we still do use pigs, but since we are not pigs and they are not us, there's a lot of similarities, but it wasn't really helping us at all figure out what was happening, like if you came across the body. So there are, how many body farm facilities do you think there is are in the United States?
I don't think that there's that many, and I seem to recall watching a video on one of the researchers going out to the body farm, like maybe a blog post or something. I want to say it's like less than five. I think there's three.
Okay. Well, there's seven.
Seven. Okay.
So close. So there's at the University of Tennessee, West Carolina University, Texas State University, Sam Houston State University. Sam Houston is just north of Houston, Texas. Southern Illinois and Colorado Mesa universities. So like I said, the main purpose of the research facilities is to study and form an understanding of the decompositional changes that occur within the human body by emphasizing the importance of the environment events that the body was found. So the original body farm, and it's kind of weird because initially it said that William Bass, 1972, worked on it, but the first official one opened in 1981. And that was at the University of Tennessee. And that is a 2.5-acre wooded plot surrounded by razor wire. At any one time, there'd be a number of bodies placed through the facilities and left to decompose. There's a number of different ways that they do this and different places that they put in different situations. They even do things like they'll lock them in the trunk of the car or submerge them in water or put them in the dirt and just watch and study what happens. One of the worst where I'll stumble across this eventually because it's here in my notes somewhere, but there is a terrifying, I didn't know that there was specific names for, like, oh, here it is. The human, so there's different stages of decomposition, obviously, that they're studying, and they're able to study each one, you know, as it's happening and keep tabs on it. The human decomposition stages that are studied begin with the fresh stage, the bloat stage, then decay, and then I don't know why this next one disturbed me the most, but the last one is called the dry stage. And I don't know why that one, especially after the bloat stage,
right,
seems so terrible to me, but just that the dry stage. So over 100 bodies are donated to the facility, probably in that same way that the cadaver factory or whatever story we just read. 60% of the donations are made by family members of individuals who are not pre-registered with the facility. So they just kind of end up there. Over 1,300 people have chosen to pre-register. So we'll kind of go quickly through some of the other ones. West Carolina University is the second one to open. And that was in, so the first one was 1981. Now, the thing that surprised me about all of the rest of these is that they were all after 2006. Like, they're all really new.
Wow.
So until then, there was only the one. And then in 2006, they started for more of them. So most of them are all run by the anthropology departments. And the other thing I noticed is that, like, when I pictured it, I just pictured, like, the big open North Carolina wilderness or whatever, where there's just, you know, six bodies over 150. But most of the, like, the biggest one is only 2.5 acres. Like, that is not a huge area, right, of land. So the one in North Carolina, or excuse me, Western Carolina, they're calling, which is North Carolina, is another place where they also train cadaver dogs. So that's another use for these, is that it helps the dogs figure out how and where things are buried. There's a couple in Texas State University. That one opened in 2008, and the local residents were not super happy with it because, number one, it smells really bad, as you might think. Number two, they did not build privacy fences around the body farms, and so, like, everyone would just see the process, and it attracts vultures in Texas. And so the way the Texas University solved that problem is not to move the body farm, but is to study the vultures and watch how scavengers like that react to things, which is useful. But I just thought it was funny that they're like, and we'll study that. You can't get rid of us. So at that one, new bodies brought about every 5 or 6 months, and they usually come from hospitals or funeral homes or medical examiner's office. And then they are driven out there. Basically the rest of these are the same idea, but they are in different environments. So they have the one in Colorado is the most arid. It hardly ever rains there. The one in southern Illinois is a lot colder. And all of those things really change the difference of how bodies are decomposing. So much so that they are thinking of opening them in Australia, because Australia was like, well, we can't use any of this data because we're Australia and spiders will not leave a body. Like, we need to study things our way. And so obviously everywhere they go, there's quite a bit of opposition just because it is kind of a gross idea. Like,
right,
every time I heard about it, it's like, well, that can't be legal. Like, it just seems like somehow it's wrong, even though it's not. I mean, I guess if you unwillingly put bodies there that didn't want to be there, that's ethically wrong. But so there have been a couple places that they did want to make them that they ended up not. But most of them are fairly small, and they put fencing around them at least. So There are three ways that a body farm can access a body. The first way is through the medical examiner's office. So if it's unclaimed or unidentified, the medical examiner might give it away. The second is through family members. The third way is by filling out a donor consent form before dying. So it's much like if you want to donate organs, you can also, I don't know if it's on that same form. Can you just say to science? Like, I would like to donate my body to science. Because they have organ, I mean, that's on
organ
our
donors,
organ yeah. donor thing.
It's binary. It's yes or no. Like, it's not,
I guess,
multiple choice. I don't know.
Huh. But obviously the practical applications of this are really kind of important when we're talking about trying to find the exact nature and time of a person's death after it's been, you find a body that's been in the woods for a month and trying to figure out. Some of the surprising things that they've found is that as a difference in the soil really makes a difference too. And there's, this is a really disgusting statement as well, but quote, pointing out how the breakdown and leaching of human proteins and bacteria out into the soil can help pinpoint the time of death and questions regarding the climate and the scene of death. So it's really like
that makes sense.
Gross and gory, but I mean, when you think about it,
it's very practical.
It's very practical. Yeah. And so all of those shows like CSI and all those things rely pretty heavily on what they're on the little tidbits of information that we find out by doing this. But anyway, there's a short thing on body farms that I didn't know that I thought was interesting. So go visit one near you.
Yeah, the blog article that I'd read had basically followed one of the researchers out to do the checks, you know.
Oh, interesting.
And so there was one that was like 2 years old and one that was 18 months old and 1 year old. And
wow.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out like, would I, cause I'm an Oregon donor. Yes. I will donate the state of Oregon to anyone who likes it. An organ donor. I don't know if I would want to donate my body to do that. Like, I guess I don't have a problem with it, but it just seems like, I don't know. But only if they did something like super ridiculous, like with
exactly.
it, like blew me out of a cannon
yes.
and then did all sorts of Looney Tunes-esque things to me. So
that'd be amazing.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to play during your Bitcoin update.
Ding, ding.
Oh, this has many different. Oh, my.
Wow.
Wow. Only halfway through that, too. It's an exciting journey of the history
cash
of...
cash register.
That British guy is going to start narrating that pretty soon. Well, that's all I had for this week.
That's a good one.
And yeah, I was so excited for this.
Yes, that vinyl.
So that CED
is incredible.
So when I came in, I showed it to you and I said, "Do you know how this works?" And you kind of were poking at it. It was like, "Well, like a laser disc." And I took it out of your hands and I said, "Stop! Don't look! I'm
no
going to show you. It's going to be so exciting."
That's rad.
So anyway, welcome to anyone new listening from the Fun Employment Radio. You can find out more about us at markandtoddcast.com. We have 101 past episodes for you to catch up with. So find an interesting topic as you scroll through and start there and start listening to them all. You can hear our other podcast, Portland at the Movies. You'll be able to hear that on December 2 at the Portland Podcast Festival. We'll be doing a little live show of our Portland at the Movies, which is going to be super fun. And I'm super excited and super nervous. And
yes.
So check that out. You can get tickets, which are only $15, and you get a cool lanyard. You get a free beer with the purchase of your tickets. So $15, that already takes all care of it.
What day of the week is that?
It is a Saturday. It is Saturday from like 6 to 10 or 6 to midnight or something like that. They have some two bands that will be playing on there. It's at the Hawthorne Theater. It'll be super cool. There's, I think, 13 different local podcasts that'll be doing little versions of their show. So find out more at portlandpodcast.com or pdxpodcast.com, I think.
Very cool. I'm looking forward
and
to
I
that.
I think that's the end. Yeah, that'll be really fun. So for no other reason than we talked about Bill Gates earlier and I haven't heard this in a while, I'm going to play Steve Ballmer shouting developers over and over and over and over again.
So I get this this hook caught in my head all the time because I'm at work and we're always talking about developers.
It is, and one of the first great, truly great things off of the internet is this video.
It really was. And God bless Steve Ballmer.
God bless Steve Ballmer. So thank you guys for listening. You can actually find us both on Facebook as well. So look up Mark is opening candy. It's like you're that guy 3D, behind us in glasses. Church trying to like quietly open the wrapper during
glasses.
Just to listen to Steve say developers. But yeah, you can find markandtalkus.com also on Facebook, and Todd Workoven and Mark Middleton. Come friend us on Facebook. Figure out how to spell my last name and then friend me. So thank you once again for listening. We will see you guys next time.
Developers.
We need your rave lights in here again. It is my worst nightmare to be like stuck in a conference like this where you're like forced to have excitement for the corporate product that will be forgotten in like 10 minutes.